Folks, I want to remind you again about our friends over at Canopy and their line of CBD products. I used to wake up several times during the night, which made it hard to get out of bed in the morning and left me really feeling less than myself all day. But I can tell you from personal experience, my sleep has dramatically improved since I started using Canopy Nighttime Blend. Now I sleep straight through the night and wake up refreshed every morning. If sleep isn't your issue, they have a variety of products that can help you out. If you struggle with muscle aches after a workout or a day out on the golf course, if you have first tee jitters or your knees lock up in your backswing, check out trycanopy.com. That's TRYKNIBI.com and look at their selection of tinctures, creams, and gummies that can give you the edge after you exercise or while you're out on the golf course. And really, just make all of your days better. Their hemp is 100% grown in the U.S., and you know we love that. And when you choose Canopy, you are choosing prized harvest, expert extractions, and precision manufacturing with zero artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. So if you need help sleeping through the night like me, relief from muscle aches, or the pressure of a busy day, give Canopy a try. Again, that's trycanopy, TRYKNIBI.com. And if you use coupon code TNT, you're going to get 20% off your first order. Again, trycanopy.com. You're going to be glad you did.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
All right, now back in making his fifth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Vikings Pro Bowl tackle Todd Stussy. Let me remind you about Todd's background. Played his college ball at Cal, where he was named All-Pac-10 three times from 1991 to 1993. He was the Morris Trophy winner in 93, which is awarded annually to the outstanding offensive lineman in the Pac-10. Todd was a first-round draft pick, the 19th overall selection by the Minnesota Vikings in 1994. Played in the NFL from 94 to 2007 with the Vikings, Panthers, Bucks, and Rams. He was named to the Pro Bowl in back-to-back years in 1997 and 98. He was a part of the Panthers team that played in Super Bowl 38 against the Patriots. On top of all of his on-the-field achievements, Todd also earned his master's degree from Northwestern University, and we're excited to have him back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Todd, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
I can't believe it's been five times that I've been on, but I appreciate you guys having me on again. You're welcome.
Glad to have you. Todd, catch us up. It's been a minute since we had you on the show. Happy New Year, first of all, to you and your family. What's been going on with you?
Oh, thanks. No, recent events, back in April, we moved, officially out to the Lake Tahoe area. I've been wanting to move back out west for a while, and with, work being remote, I can kind of live where I want to. And so I'm spoiled by the fact that the mountains are right behind me, and I actually spent a little time on the slopes with my son, earlier today. So life is good. I finished my second master's from Northwestern actually this summer. I received my degree in master's of data science. So that's what I'm currently doing with my day-to-day life. And it's the next adventure kind of around the corner post football. And I'm as engaged at this as I am in my previous career. And it's been fun. It's been exciting. It's been entirely different, but it's not nearly as hard on your body.
I bet not. Todd, I want to catch up on a thing that you were doing last time we got to spend some time with you. I know at one point you were a part of a football player health study being done by Harvard University. Did that ever wrap up, and are you still a part of that?
I'm still a part of it. We meet about every other month virtually right now, and they have a number of different studies that they're rolling out. It was probably 2 years ago that I did a in-person evaluation where it was like an executive level physical, did a number of different tests, and they've done that to hundreds, maybe even thousands of former players, and they're using it to collect information, not just to better understand former players and health and the kind of the wear and tear that's associated with a game like football, but also there's a number of different kind of ways. There's very few longitudinal studies around health that are done. And understanding, being able to track someone over a longer period of time and seeing how their health evolves is something that could be beneficial for military with some of the concussions issues that they have. Also, I mean, I actually find a lot of correlation with military in terms of, like, it's very similar to NFL players. When you kind of, a lot of guys leave the league in their early 30s, a lot of times that's when military, they're basically forced to kind of contend with leaving a sport or leaving a profession, to say, that was really a big part of their identity. I knew a lot of guys from former military that were in the business school program with me that we had a lot to kind of share and discuss around that. So there's it's not just physical health, it's also mental health that the Harvard study is focusing on. And while the returns have been small because it's so early, I think the benefits will continue to grow the longer that the study is maintained.
Is part of that study looking into the CTE situation and how guys are, you know, cognitively responding years after their playing days?
Yes and no. I mean, right now the only way you can diagnose it is by having post-mortem, and so there is that challenge, but there's quite a bit about tracking and better understanding cognitive function as you get older post-football, being able to identify potentially commonalities with different players, etc. I mean, I don't want to minimize anyone's burden that has around concussions and that kind of thing, but I do believe that some of this is caught up in the wash with a lot of players that I knew that really struggled post football because it was such a singular identity of who they were, and some of the depression symptoms that are spoken about that commonly are attributed to CTE. I think that a lot of that has to do with also the loss of identity, loss of direction, loss of drive and motivation that a lot of guys suffer. Frankly, I suffered for the first year before I kind of threw myself into academics. Cause it is such a big part of who you are. I mean, when you go to a dinner party talking to somebody, oh, what do you do? Well, it's one thing to say I played football, but it's another thing. I played football and it was 5 years ago. What do you do now? I really don't do anything right now. There's a disconnect that guys really, that if they can't get traction somewhere else, and not everybody can be an announcer, not everybody can be a coach, to find that next direction is something that is equally troublesome.
Yeah, and just to take that a half step further, Todd, and we've talked to Leonard Wheeler, who spent some time with the Vikings and the Panthers as well.
Yeah, I played with Leonard.
Both teams. And Leonard talks about, you know, what it's like to when your career's over, right? You know, and most guys don't get the teary-eyed press conference, you know, send off. Most guys are retired because they get cut and the phone never doesn't ring again. And now you're left try to figure out, who am I and what do I do next? Talk about, you know, you say you went through that for your first year. And like I said, Leonard talked about the struggle that he went through. Talk about what it was like for you.
I was actually getting ready to go back to college to finish my undergrad. Cal's got a kind of, or at least at the time, had a weird little exception where 24 of your last 30 units had to be done on campus to graduate. And so I didn't have the ability to take any more classes elsewhere unless I wound up basically transferring all my credits and graduating from another university. And my wife was not going to have that. She was a Cal grad. She's like, going back. But right when I was getting ready to go back, this was in 2008, my former offensive line coach at the Panthers and the Rams called me up. Paul Boudreau was the O-line coach at the Atlanta Falcons at the time. And I can't remember the guy's name. He was a first-round draft pick out of USC. Baker, I think was his last name. He was a left tackle. he had a bad back issue that was lingering. I think he had surgery in the off season. And so he was, they weren't sure if he was going to be back. And Paul asked me, like, hey, if I need you at the end of the training camp, are you going to be in shape? And I'm like, well, I was kind of in my head, not really considering it at all, but I was like, no training camp, one more season. Yeah, I could do that, I guess. And so I dropped out of my classes and started working out again. And long story short, they flew me in for a workout. Worked out next to Wayne Gandy, who was also drafted the same year I was. He was at the Falcons the year before, and we did a workout. They took a while, end of the day. It was right before Halloween. And when, at the end of the day, decided to sign Wayne Gandy, partially because of his contract that they just cut him on, he would have been a smaller salary cap, impact than I would be signing out the street. So that was the consideration, supposedly. But long story short, I remember being relieved that I was going to be able, that I actually didn't get signed, because I was more excited probably than signing was the fact that I was going to go back and be able to spend Halloween with my two young sons, who, it really kind of hurt me, the fact that I was leaving, but I had already made that commitment and stuff. And so, anyways, so I came home, and then it was really kind of unclear. Okay, I'm not in school. I'm not working out for any reason anymore. I'm obviously tired. What the heck am I going to do? And my wife will tell you that she's never had her yard look so nice. I kind of got into smoking cigars in the backyard and doing yard work. And it was, she called me her little yard boy, but eventually, you know what? Like, I start to get kind of antsy, irritable, and I needed some direction. And so for me, the following fall, I took one Spanish class that summer in St. Louis, and then I wound up going back to school. I commuted for two semesters and finished my final year in the means that I wanted to. I kind of felt like it was my kids were young. They're used to bringing their grades home to mom and dad, and I told them, like, no, I'd, we're flipping the script here. Dad's bringing home his grades to you. And so it was, I got an apartment in, just outside of Berkeley, didn't have a TV, didn't have any distractions. And in that final year, I wound up, really kind of dedicating myself to that as being my primary task. And I got a 3.83 in my final year at Cal. And there, that really boosted my confidence. I was eking by at a 2.0 something before then, when football was my primary focus. I was doing enough not to get it in trouble, but it was far from like my primary focus. So I never really had a ton of confidence in my academic ability, but that really kind of was my impetus to, like, okay, you know what? I still don't know exactly what I want to do, but I know that the way I'm going to fill in for some of my gaps is going back to school. And so I immediately, after graduating from Cal, I wound up enrolled in the MBA program at Kellogg Northwestern, finished that in 2012. And during that time that I wound up beginning to work in the analytics space. And but at the same time, I really knew I wanted to go back and get my master's in data science. It took me about 6 years before I built up the courage to tell my wife that I wanted to go back one more time, and then graduated this August from that degree program. And you know what? Long story short, I was very fortunate. And by the way, the NFL paid for this last program. They buy about $50,000 in total expenses. They paid for about 47 of it. So it was. There's so many programs that the NFL offers today through their Players Trust program that it's really just like, it's a shame that more guys don't take advantage of it. But it is building in popularity, it's building in players being aware of it, etc. But really, long story short, is slowly over that. I mean, I'm now 13, 14 years post football. And every year it's like, you know what? I evolve and I grow in understanding and grow in depth. But it's like that first year when you're just kind of coming out, it's tough. I mean, cause there's a lot of, you know, football teaches you many intangibles, but exposed to, especially like 2008 when we were, when I was done in the NFL. I mean, the economy was trash at the time. And what kind of value is what, how am I going to benefit a company? Why are they going to hire me? I mean, I barely even knew how to work a spreadsheet back then. And so it was through the academic programs that I totally built up my confidence and my understanding and really being able to, and then eventually my kind of confidence from football kicked into business where I can do this. I know this. And it was, I mean, it's been a great run. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Bob, questions for Todd?
Hey, it's great to talk to you again, Todd. And I wanted to stay on that same topic. Yeah. I think you answered a lot of the same things I was going to ask about ending up at Cal Berkeley as far as an academic institution like that. Was this something, it had to be something that was stressed to you during your upbringing, Todd, but obviously it clicked when you were there and everything, but you had a lot of football ability, but to get into Cal, there was something there. Talk more about how the decision to attend Cal in the first place.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd love to tell you that I was like, no, I wanted to go to a premier academic institution. But the truth is, you know what, I fell in love with Rod Marinelli, who's now the defensive line coach at the Oakland Raiders, and Rod was the head coach at the Detroit Lions. I reconnected when I was in Tampa, but I was so excited about going to play for him as a defensive lineman coming out of high school, and he was just, if you meet Rod once, you'll see the kind of energy, even in his 70s, that he still exudes. And, he was the reason I went to Cal. I was just fortunate that he wasn't like at Fresno State or something like that, because, I'd probably not be in the same position I am right now. So, for what it's worth, I mean, just being honest with you guys, it wasn't really until my next time around when I went back to Cal, after I was done playing, and Cal didn't pay for that. The scholarship was no longer in effect. I paid for that in my own pocket. It was time that I was sacrificing for my own family. And so, damn if I wasn't going to make the most of it. And I'm glad I took that approach, because what it really taught me, and I think a lot of guys, as they leave the NFL, especially if we're able to stick around for a while, even though you don't maybe know anything about business or another industry or whatever, the reality is the template that we use to be successful in football, it's universal. It works everywhere. If you have passion for something and you're committed to being the best at it you possibly can be, you're going to be better than most people out there. That's just the reality, because most people don't care enough. They're not wired away in a way that guys that make it as long as I did in the NFL. It's what you do is so much a part of who you are, and you want to be a part of success. You want to be. There's a kind of a daily challenge where, like, how good can I get today? How can I improve? And those kinds of things that, like, it's just, you know what, it's pointing at the next objective, figuring out what the next objective that truly lights your fire. And I guarantee you, it's like we're getting a late start. I didn't get really into it until I was almost 40. But actually, I was 40. But you know what? I feel like I've made up ground, and my intangibles plus what I've learned in the last 10 years has put me in a position of where I'm able to do exactly what I want to do every day, and still have the free time, like I said, to go skiing with my son in the afternoon.
Well, in addition to the education theme since tonight's show, Todd, we've also talked to our other guests about draft day, and you, unlike some of the other guests, didn't have to wait too long to get drafted. You were a first rounder. What was it like bring me back to that day and when a California kid gets the call from the Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lee Steinberg was my my agent at the time, and he actually had Dan Wilkinson, the first pick of the draft. He didn't go to the draft that year. He came to Newport Beach where Lee was having the draft party, and that's where I went. Back in 94, there wasn't really first, like the top couple picks went to the draft, but it was like top two or three. It wasn't the entire first round like it is now. And so I went to Newport Beach. My girlfriend, now wife, her family was down there anyways. And so I wound up watching all the cameras kind of swoop around Dan Wilkinson and, that whole kind of, big orchestrated scene. And then it kind of just settled in. I knew that there was a couple, Lee Steinberg thought that the Green Bay Packers were going to draft me. I think, they had a 17th pick or something like that. And, my dad was excited about that because he grew up just outside of Green Bay, in Appleton, Wisconsin. And, but no, Green Bay came and went. They wanted drafting, Aaron Taylor from Notre Dame. And so I remember when the Vikings, they had two picks, they had the 18th and 19th pick. They picked, Dwayne Washington, 18. And then they were waiting for the, announcement and talking to different people. You kind of hear like, okay, you're going to get the phone call before you hear them announce you. And eventually the clock was getting down to like 30 seconds or something. Like, okay, I haven't got a phone call. So, okay, who's up after the Vikings? And, I think Detroit had the next pick or something like that. San Fran was also a consideration. And then like, I wasn't even watching the TV at the moment. I was like talking to somebody next to me and I hear my name on the TV and, Paul Tagovailoa announced it. I'm like, who, what? Like, I literally kind of threw me for a loop because I was thinking that and what basically was going on at the time behind the scenes, I found out later is that the 49ers were fervently trying to trade up to pick me with the 19th pick. Negotiating with Denny Green and the Vikings at the, and they weren't able to come to terms. And so because of them being preoccupied with that, they never called me before the draft. Before they announced me, they just basically called to New York and told whoever ran the card up to go send the card up. So, trade off, I mean, you know what? I wouldn't trade my time at the Vikings for anything by any means, but it is kind of interesting that, Doug Bryan was a teammate of mine at Cal. Him and a couple rookie free agents, from Cal also went there. They all got Super Bowl rings that year because 94, 95 Super Bowls, the 49ers won. And so, but you know what? They also had offensive linemen like Steve Wallace and Harris Barton and stuff. And so, who knows if I would have played right away. You don't try to look back. So that was my kind of draft day story. One last little kind of other mention is, I thought it was really funny how when I flew out to Minnesota that night, they flew me first class. And on the way back, I think it was a good signal they sent. I was like in the last row of coach, like in the corner seat, just stuffed in there. And so it's like, okay, kind of bring you down to earth real quick. So, that was my draft.
Todd, like we mentioned in your intro, you were with the Panthers in 2003 when you guys go all the way to the Super Bowl against the Patriots. What was it like being in that game? And was being a part of a Super Bowl everything you dreamed it would be like?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I don't know. It's really kind of tough. I know I've learned to kind of embrace it and enjoy it a little bit more, but it's like, it's hard. I mean, I guess maybe it would have been easier to get blown out and like never to be like, I mean, but we were, our nickname Charlotte, we were the cardiac cats. Like, we won, I forget the stat, but we won 8 games by less than 5 points or something like that. We found a way to eke out every close game we won. That playoff, wild card game, we played the Rams, beat them in a double overtime in St. Louis. And so we just were used to finding a way to win, and to get so close to be tied almost before the end of the game. And then circumstances happened that Tom Brady, Adam Vinatieri, we all know the event by same guys, like they tore the hearts out of like 3 different teams over the years, or more, if you look at Tom Brady and all the success he's had. But, it was, I cherish the opportunity, but it's, like Mr. Richardson was so nice to buy us these gorgeous rings, and I've never put it on, and I'd never probably will. It's in my safe. I have it. I'll never sell it or any cherish, but it's a loser's ring. I'll never look at it any different than that. It's like, it's a runner up, and it's like, that's okay. I mean, I think you learn more about yourself through the heartaches than you ever do the successes. And so in a lot of ways, like living through that and kind of learning to deal with it is, one of the reasons why I'm who I am right now. So it's all good, but it's still, I'm glad I had a chance to do it. Wish it was maybe in San Diego rather than Houston. The weather sucked that week, but other than that, no complaints.
And Todd, after the opening kickoff in a Super Bowl, does it turn into just another football game, or were you constantly aware of the magnitude of what that game was?
It eventually, but it was hard to settle down like that. I mean, your heart's racing a million miles an hour, and I knew that I was going to be like reacting that way, that like I literally was trying to play mind games with myself, that like this is just any other game. But like the routine of a Super Bowl is so different than the routine of any other game. The halftime's like an hour. I mean, normally, literally, you come into the locker room at halftime for a normal game. You come in, use the restroom. I would sometimes, wind up like I sweated like a maniac. I'd sometimes put on dry pants. You'd wind up getting a drink and then talk to your coach for like 3 minutes. And then it was like 2-minute warning. We're going back out. Just like I remember sitting in there like feeling cold and stiff, and I stretched. And I rode the bike, and we had a couple veterans there that were all kind of competing over who's going to get on the bike next. Because it's just like it's an eternity sitting in there waiting for the game to begin again. So the routine's really weird. And it was, I wouldn't say it ever felt like a normal game. It was, my heart rate eventually got down to normal, but it's hard to, I'd love to know how someone did it if they were able to trick themselves to just think of it as any normal game, because what other game do you know that like, you know, there's only one winner at the end of it and the season's over regardless. The one thing I remember most about it, and I've never seen this happen anywhere else, when the Patriots kicked the winning field goal, they had probably 25 or 30 people in those like yellow security jackets. They ran on the field with a rope between them, literally to segment us off, to corral us off the field because they had to get ready for the celebration. And so you're used to kind of after a game, even if you don't win, you go across and say, hey, good game to the guy that you played against, or someone that you maybe know on the other team. Literally, we weren't allowed to. It was get off the field, winners only. And that was harsh. That really kind of stung a little bit, because that was like, dang, it's like you kind of feel like your last night's trash kind of thing.
Wow. Todd, so before...
It's a brutal side of the glamour of the Super Bowl.
I bet. Todd, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing now and follow you, whether it's online or it's on social media?
Yeah, no, what? I don't really. I've been kind of like, life's been busy. I maybe get back into Twitter once in a while. My Twitter is at Todd Stussy, but I don't think I've posted anything in 2 years, so I'm not the best person to know what. If I do get back into it, I've had a couple of kind of engagements, so I'm sure I'll eventually double back. And I do appreciate having you on. It's always great talking to you guys, and I do peek on you guys from time to time. I look into social media. I just don't really indulge in posting very much.
Well, Todd, we're always excited to have you as part of the show. I'm sitting here in my Todd Stussy jersey because how much we enjoy and respect you. So we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'll also bring on some of my other teammates one time. I just had one with Randall McDaniel and Robert Smith a couple of weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. So if you want me to, I can rally some of my former teammates. That's usually fun hearing different stories being told.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, we'd love that. Todd? Take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Happy New Year, Todd.
Hey, Happy New Year. Thank you, guys. Have a great year.
Bye.
Thanks, Todd. That's the great Todd Stussy. Bob, a couple of things about that Stu said, right, about the ring, right? It's the loser's ring. I'm not going to wear it. I can't imagine myself ever wear. That's one of the things that, you know, I always look at when one of our favorite teams is doing well. When the Red Sox are doing well, you know, you can buy the division championship t-shirt, you can buy the wild card championship t-shirt, you can buy the American League championship t-shirt. I don't want any of those t-shirts. I don't want any, if it's not the Super Bowl, it's not the World Series, I don't want to remember, hey, we won the ALCS, but we lost the World Series. No, I don't want that. All right. That to me, just like Todd said, that reminds me not to revel in the fact that the Steelers won the AFC championship or the Red Sox won the ALCS. That reminds me that we didn't win the big one, that we lost. I don't want it around. You know, I understand what that feels like or what that must feel like. It's, you know, you like, yeah, that's nice. We didn't win it though. I don't want to think about that. And I can imagine that must be how Todd feels.
Exactly, Chris. And I totally agree with both of you. I mean, think about it. I mean, there's so many schools and teams, I mean, you see stadiums of some of the lesser teams that haven't won in a long time, but they have won maybe division titles in the past, and they have banners for that now, Chris. And you see them all over gymnasiums. I've seen them on college campuses, you know, so-and-so won the this division of this in 2004. They have banners upon banner upon banner, but none of them are championship banners. I mean, it's almost like a reason to cover the wall, you know, but I could understand Stu saying, you know, look, I mean, if I stare at this ring, all that's going to do is saying we came up short. And right, that's not what they play the game for. Yes, it's an accomplishment. It's like any other trophy, but when you play at that kind of level and you get to that kind of a game with that kind of meaning, that could only be kind of a disappointing thing. So I'm totally with you guys, and I totally agree with him.
And I don't know if you remember, but way back when early on in this show's history, we had Dorsey Levins on the show, and Dorsey won a Super Bowl, lost two. And he talked about how he wished he didn't go to the two that they lost. He said, I'd rather not have played in the Super Bowl than to have played in the Super Bowl and lost, because the pain is too much. You remember, for having, you know, you climb the ladder all season long to get to the top and then you fall short. I'd rather not have climbed that far. And I understand that. It's something that's always stuck with me that Dorsey told us. And again, tonight with Stu. Yeah, I can understand how that would be a pain that you just rather not think about. So I get it. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. Here, two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities. We'll do that right on the other side of this real quick station break.